The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to The Home Show. I'm Sinead Ryan. Coming up today, do you like the idea of owning a castle which dates before the flight of the Earls? Well, there's one on sale in Fermanagh. We'll find out all about it. Could communal living be the way of the future? Turning your balcony into a garden? And why settle for just one master bedroom? Arlene McIntyre will be telling us why we should have two. If you'd like to get involved in The Home Show today, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you'll find me on Instagram and X at SineadRyan100. Now, I'm sure most people out there have at one stage or another in their life had the experience of being a housemate or a flatmate, maybe while they were in their student years or in their first job. And whether it was smelly housemates or dirty dishes piling up in the sink or people not paying their rent on time, you know, it might be the best fun you've ever had, but it's certainly not the most stellar way we've probably ever lived. Well, I'll be speaking to somebody later on the show who thinks that communal living is absolutely the way to go amid a housing crisis and a cost of living crisis. And she has gone back to doing just that. So do tune in for that later on in the show. It'll be a fascinating discussion. And I'd love to hear from you. What was your worst and best experience of being a housemate, if you have shared flats? Because I think we all have some horror stories about that time in our lives. You can get in touch with us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com or find me on Instagram, and you're very welcome along today. Now, if you're an aspiring first-time buyer, you probably haven't been seeing much in your daft feed in the way of castles that can accommodate dozens of people and have a history dating back beyond the flight of the Earls and more recently to Princess Diana. But that doesn't mean they're not out there. Unless you happen to have 6 or 7 million euros hanging around, well, maybe the Belle Isle estate in Fermanagh might not be for you. But who will buy this special place? Well, Neil Morrison is Director of Savills, who are the property's agents, and joins me now. Neil, you're very welcome along to The Home Show. Tell us a little bit about Belle Isle.
Belle Isle is an outstandingly picturesque and ecologically important property and location on the banks of Loch Earn, which is famed for its variety of landscape and natural beauty. It is just an incredible castle. And with 448 acres, 4 private islands, you can imagine our phones are just red hot.
It is absolutely beautiful. It looks gorgeous. Now, it looks very, very old, which it is, but it's just on stunning grounds. And as you say, there are four islands, but it's not just one house, is it?
No, you've got the main castle, which dates back to 1700s. You've also then got 6 cottages / houses, plus a courtyard which offers 9 different apartments of 1, 2, 3 bed accommodation, plus 2 renovated coach houses. The whole estate, when fully occupied, could sleep in the region of about 65 people.
Right. Well, now that hardly makes it a family home unless you're that way inclined. So it's probably going to end up a commercial property. Tell us who owns it.
It is owned by Lord Nicholas Hamilton, who is the son of the Duke of Abercorn.
And he was a cousin to Princess Diana, and he has now put the property on the market because it was in the family, wasn't it, for a long time?
It is. The Duke bought it in 1991.
Okay. Now, tell us, has there been any interest in it so far, Neil?
We have had interest from the north, the south, the UK, Europe, as far as people coming across from Greece. We've also had people flying from the States. We've also had a few people who are due to come in the next couple of weeks from the Far East. So interest has been good. Mm. Very good.
And it sleeps up to 65 people. So yeah. Its commercial qualities would seem to sing out there. I mean, do you think it's best suited to being a hotel, or who do you think will turn the property into what use?
We've had parties look at it as a private home. We've had people look at it as a commercial venture, i.e. take the existing castle and extend by, say, another 30 rooms, make it a more permanent wedding venue, because Belle Isle currently isn't that well known and that well advertised just because of the family connection. And it's really just been run as a business just to kind of pay the bills. Mm. But there's certainly scope there to have that kind of dream wedding in this location. Other operators and other buyers have looked at this to potentially buy it for holiday parks, cottages, you know, maybe do some kind of retreat, a medical retreat, you know, for therapy. It's incredible the amount of buyers and different options that have appeared over the process.
Now, I know you were saying that some of it dates back very, very far indeed, and the original castle, I think, was 14th century, and it has various ownerships between then, including, as I said, during the flight of the Earls in the 17th century.
Yeah.
What kind of structural condition is it in, Neil, for anyone who wants to take a punt on it now in 2024?
Oh, structurally it's sound. No issues at all with that. The castle was last renovated in 2017. There'll obviously be a few wee bits and bobs because it's a, you know, a 200, 300-year-old property, but structurally it's 100%.
So they might get a big pile, but they won't be getting a big pile of bricks. Is that it? All right. Well, tell me a little bit about the interior. I've had a look at some of the pictures. So we're talking about four-poster beds and floral pelmets and large squishy sofas.
It's everything you said. And you can, it takes you back to a different period when you walk into the property. You go through the main entrance and you've got the study, which has windows and doors overlooking Loch Earn. You go into the drawing room again with its bay windows again, giving these beautiful aspects over the loch. Then you turn right and that leads you down a hallway which has got a lift into the first floor, which is sweep down then into the main dining room, which has got a wedding license for 65 people. And above that, you have a small balcony where I'm told that many people, when they have their weddings, they have little band playing above as the ceremony takes place. And the upstairs is split into two different wings. You've got the Abercorn wing and the Hamilton wing, and all bedrooms bar two have en suites. It's an incredible property.
Right, so it's actually ready to go. I mean, there's not a lot that needs to be done to it. Talk to me about the grounds. It's huge, isn't it?
You do. There's a total of 448 acres.
Wow.
So if you come in to the estate, there's an old post office building which kind of keeps guard on those people who enter, and it sweeps round. You cross a bridge which takes you on to the old Ballymacmanus Island or Belle Isle Island. But as you kind of sweep over that bridge, you've got two cottages on the left-hand side, Cathcart's Lodge and Cathcart's Bungalow, and then a smaller bridge house where people can rent, and it's got a jetty at its front door so you can get into your boat and go around the lock and come back up to the jetty into the house and crack open a wee beer. But then as you come down into the main estate and into the castle, what you see is it's very much like it's a tree-lined avenue which takes you into Belle Isle, similar, some would say, to kind of the Dark Head. It's that kind of look. And then as you drive in, you just see this imposing castle, fully restored, absolutely splendid. And you turn to your left, you've got the views over Loch Earn. It's just incredible.
Oh, it sounds absolutely beautiful. It'd be lovely, actually, if it was taken over as a public building that, you know, you could visit rather than a private home. I'm beginning to think now because it looks fab. Now, Neil, we know that properties, not just of this nature, but at the very high end of the market like this, can take a lot longer to sell. I mean, we've heard about kind of properties in ordinary residential, 3 and 4 bedroom homes. I mean, they're gone as soon as they're listed. But properties like this, you have to take a long view on it, don't you?
Well, it's a different buyer profile, because what you're finding is that the buyers aren't just all local, and some people then have to organise to get flights across. And obviously the people who are going to look at these are high net worths or very, very busy. So that does take a little bit longer just to get viewings carried out and go through the process. But we expect this to close probably in the next, hopefully, 4 to 6 weeks, because of the interest levels.
Yeah. And tell me, is there still money at that end of the market now? You're not talking about people waiting on their mortgage to come through or anything, are you?
There's, as you only well don't know, there is a lot of people on the island who have a lot of money and are happily going to part with it on this property.
Okay, well, that is the Belle Isle estate. So hopefully it'll go for you there, Neil, at around, it's 5.95 million sterling. So whatever that computes to in euro, if it is indeed an Irish or European buyer.
100%. Thanks very much.
Now, London, like so many other cities in Europe, is in the midst of a cost of living crisis, and many young people have had to look at resourceful and creative ways to make city life work. And one such solution is communal living. So how does it work, and would it work here? Well, Rosie Kellett is a food writer and chef living communally in the city and joins me now. Rosie, you're very welcome along to The Home Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Now, is this just like a giant big flat share? Tell me how it works.
All right. Well, I can tell you how it works for us. I think communal living looks different every corner that you look at and wherever you are in the world. But for me, I live in a sort of disused warehouse building with six of my friends. They're my friends now, but when I moved in, I didn't know them. And communal living for us, really, in a nutshell, means that we each pay £25 a week into a sort of bank account, and we buy all of our household goods and food for the week from that money, and we share everything. And then I guess another key component is that one night of the week, one person cooks for everybody in the house.
Right. Okay. So you're not all kind of doing your own thing and saying this shelf is mine and this cupboard is mine and, you
exactly.
know, don't touch my milk and all that kind
right.
of thing.
Right. Everything is shared. So it's like everything in the fridge is for whoever would like it. We have it like there's nuances to all of it. And there's a system whereby if you do buy something for yourself and it's just for you, you label it, it's yours, no one will touch it. But the rule is if it's not labeled, it's fair game. And, you know, everyone just goes for free for all.
Okay, that sounds much more like a family, actually, with teenagers than anything else.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, let's start at the beginning. How did you get to this point? What kind of got you to the stage where you thought this was going to be the way you live, your home for the next whatever period of time, number of years?
To be quite honest, I did not plan to live this way. I was coming out of a bad breakup. I was living with my ex and we broke up and I moved out and I was looking for somewhere to live. And this was 4 years ago. And even then it was really, really tough. It was just before the pandemic, actually in March of 2020. And I was really struggling to find somewhere to live. And this was honestly like a last resort, sort of last ditch attempt to find a good room that I could afford and that was, you know, livable and like and worth moving into. So I came for an interview. And at the time, there were like 10 people living here. I think they'd interviewed another 12 people that same evening. And I went into it not really expecting to like it or want it. And then by the end of the interview, I was leaving thinking, oh my God, I really hope I get the room. But I didn't know about the communal aspect of living here. That was sort of explained it all at the kitchen table at this interview. And I'm a chef, so I'm a really keen cook. I love to cook for people. I really like to share food. I love to feed people. And even I, in that interview scenario, when they explained it to me, had concerns because I was like, you know, what if the food is horrible? Like, what if I don't want to eat what you've made? And like, what if people aren't respectful? And what if we don't all have the same ideas about what a clean kitchen looks like? And, you know, all of these things were kind of revolving around my head. But I was in no position to turn it down. And I got offered the room and I accepted and I moved in. And then I would say, like, within the first 6 months, I was hooked. And I can't really imagine now, like, living any other way in London, you know, I couldn't now go back to living in a flat share, sort of anonymous flat share where everyone has their own shelf in the fridge.
Okay, so the building is as important, I suppose, as how you live. And this is in Hackney, Wick.
Yeah.
It's like a warehouse or an old commercial building. So describe it to us, because I know people would know about the loft living maybe down in New York, in Manhattan, you know, these beautiful kind of industrial areas with gorgeous windows and all the friends there and all of that. Mm. But, or the scene from Ghost, you know, the piano coming up through the thing and all that. So these are old commercial buildings. Did it have to get to the stage where it was suitable for residential housing, or was it always that way?
Honestly, I don't know the history of it. I moved in, you know, 4 years ago, and it's an old carpet warehouse. It looks like an industrial building, but it's been made to be livable. And, you know, this, we all have our own private bedrooms, and then there's large communal spaces like the living room and the kitchen. But I can't really speak to what other people's buildings look like. I can only really talk about our own. And yeah, it looks like a commercial building from the outside. It looks like an industrial space. And then it's a home when you come inside.
Okay, so everybody has their own bedroom, which is private space where you can just be alone. And I'm sure there's times when you want to do that. Does everybody have their own bathroom?
No, we have two bathrooms and we just share them like any other flat share. And it, you know, works fine. There's seven of us living here. We have two showers. I think because we're all in creative careers, none of us really work a 9-to-5. We all have different schedules. And so it kind of magically just works out that no one's ever queuing for the shower. I think we're really lucky in that respect. Never really thought too much about it because it's always just worked out fine. And sort of the same, I think a lot of people ask me about the cooking and the how it works. And like, if it's one night a week, like, how do you plan it? And how do you book your night? And like, we just have a blackboard in the kitchen. And, you know, towards Sunday each week, we'll all just write down our names on the day that we'd like to cook for the following week. And then it just kind of works out.
Okay, so the low tech option, although I'm sure there's a WhatsApp group because everything else has one.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or several.
You wouldn't believe.
So, Rosie, I reckon they're probably delighted with your day then, because you're a chef, so you probably knock up something amazing for them.
I do cook a lot. I probably cook more, actually. I sometimes do more than one night a week, and I love it. But another of my housemates is a professional chef as well, and everyone that lives here loves food. But I would say, you know, like some of them, when they moved in, had a couple of meals that they felt confident cooking, and then were quite intimidated by like moving beyond that. And now, having lived here for a few years, are like far more confident cooks and have like a whole repertoire of things, and they could look in the fridge and see a sort of random collection of ingredients and pull together a meal for 10 people without really blinking, which is like not a skill that I think a lot of people feel very intimidated by that. But through practice and through living this way and through the nature of sort of having these like everyday caretaking elements that are woven into your life, like it becomes second nature and it becomes like a really joyful thing and something that you look forward to because you cook once a week. So like if you imagine having to make your dinner for yourself every single night of the week, it can become quite repetitive and boring and difficult to think of exciting things to cook. But if you only have to cook once and you like to cook, then you spend all week thinking about what you might make, and then, you know, it makes for a really exciting dinner time for everybody.
Okay, interesting. Now, I'm sure from time to time you need to sit down, you need to have a conversation. Are we putting enough in the kitty? Did we buy the right things? You know, what if, you know, somebody's been abusing the place or not doing their chores? How does that kind of thing work itself out?
So we do regular house meetings, which are organized through the, I mean, it takes weeks to find a time that like everybody can be in for 1 hour, and we do multiple WhatsApp polls and we end up finding a time. Then we sit down and have a house meeting, and we'll all make sure that we've got whatever points we want to raise. We'll write an agenda and then we like go through it. And we usually do it over dinner. So we'll sit down to eat dinner and we'll just like chat through everything at the same time. And we all have a house chore. So like maybe if, let's say someone hasn't really been doing theirs regularly enough or whatever, we'll have a conversation about it and say, you know, do you still want to do that chore? Does someone else want to volunteer to do it? And should we swap things around a bit? And we've done that in the past when we've ran into conflict, and that's often like kind of solved it really. And
okay. So it sounds very, it is communal, but it sounds quite grown up. It sounds quite mature. And you said that you were interviewed to join. And I presume then that's a key element because, you know, they say you can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends. Is it part of that, you know, everybody wanted like-minded people? I mean, presumably you want professionals. You said most of you are in the creative industries. Is there a split between men and women, or like what elements would you be looking for now if a place became available there?
So yeah, because I think it's difficult to describe how it's happened in the past because it's been a very sort of like transient, like different people have come in at different times. But let's say we were looking for a new housemate. It's absolutely crucial that you're on board with the idea of communal living in the way that we do it. So cooking for each other, sharing food, like having a chore that you're in charge of. It's not possible. If one person isn't into it, then the whole thing falls off. And I think it's not right for everybody. I have a lot of friends who wouldn't want to live this way and who would, you know, not fare well here. And then, you know, there's a certain type of person that like thrives in this environment. So it's really important to figure out whether that, you know, the new person is on the same wavelength for those reasons. And then, yeah, I suppose like, I wonder if someone who did work a more traditional 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job would fit in as well, just because the rest of our schedules are so all over the place. We don't really, bank holidays don't really mean anything, you know, like we're often working on a bank holiday. It's like, so I don't know how that would go, but it's not like crucial. And when it comes to gender, actually quite a few members of my housemates are non-binary. And so we're not really that bothered by gender in that sense. And we would never discriminate against gender.
And do you have a kind of a rule about maybe having boyfriends or girlfriends or partners to stay overnight, or is that something you negotiate
no
on the go?
No rules about that. Like, people can stay whenever they like, and people do have friends or boyfriends, partners, siblings, visiting family over all the time. And it just, I don't know how it works, but it just fits in.
Like, extra one for dinner.
More money. Yeah, it's fine. It just works. But like, if a friend was staying for a week, then they would chip into the kitty because then they'd eat all their meals with us, or at least some of them. But yeah, no, if boyfriends are staying over for the night, it's fine. Like, it's really nice, actually, and we have that quite a lot.
And do you, what are the best bits then about it? I mean, I presume you're never alone, and if that's something that appeals to you, this would be an arrangement that would work.
It would. I think London is a really tough city, and it's only getting tougher to build a good life here. And I know that in the first sort of 5 years of living in London, I was desperately lonely, and it felt really, really bizarre to be in such a busy city with, you know, millions of people living here and feel so alone. And so I think, you know, for me, it gave me a sense of community and friendship beyond the people that I worked with and beyond my family members. And it's actually not quite just never being alone, because I often come home after a long day and I'll stay in my bedroom in the evening and be alone, you know, like by choice. But it's actually just the knowledge that there are other people in the house, and that if you do need to hang out with someone, or you do need to have a conversation, or like, you know, hang out, or there's always someone available. And that's a very comforting feeling.
And who owns the building? If it's a commercial building, do you pay rent to a landlord?
Yeah. We just pay rent.
Okay. All right. And is there anything that you'd change, Rosie, having done it?
About my experience or about...
Yeah, about co-living in general, this communal arrangement. Is there something that you kind of would advise people to do, maybe what you did or a little bit differently?
I think I would to be honest, for me, it all comes down to the cooking and the food. And I would encourage anybody, even if you don't need to be in a disused carpet warehouse to do this. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could live in a flat share with three of your friends. And I would encourage you to try and cook a few meals a week together and just see what happens, because it is cheaper. It's better for the planet. It's better for you. It's more delicious. You have a nicer time. There is no downside. And I think the more people that can cook together and foster a little bit of community at home, the better we all will be. You know, society will benefit.
And tell me, do you think that there's more scope in cities like London and indeed Dublin, where there are vacant warehouse type facilities, that this could take off in a bigger way?
I really hope so. I think that all our government definitely needs to do more to provide affordable housing in cities, and that is one way of doing it. I don't feel that hopeful with our current government, but I think it should happen, and it could happen, and I hope that it will.
Rosie Kellett, food writer and chef and co-liver in communal living. Thank you very much for joining us on The Home Show.
Thanks so much, Sinead.
Now it's almost time for this year's Borbia Bloom Festival back in the Phoenix Park. This showcase is an annual treat for anyone who loves gardening, but you don't have to be green fingered to find something of interest, as our next guest can attest to. Gavin Saunders is head of compost at New Leaf Compost and the man behind the Above and Beyond Balcony Garden, and joins me now. Head of compost. Well, compost, of course, is only one of the ingredients in your gorgeous garden, and the photographs, I'd say, probably don't do it justice, but it's absolutely lovely. We've been doing a lot on the show over the last couple of months about small spaces and curating them and making them kind of seem bigger than they are, and utilising an eco-friendly approach to it. So you have effectively designed, we're used to when we see gardens, a few pot plants, maybe a chair and a table. This is different. This is a whole garden.
Yeah, it is indeed. And it's myself and my colleague, Stephen Maggall, we both designed the garden for the Borbia Bloom show. We've actually supplied the compost in there for the past number of years to all the show gardens, so it just seemed a natural fit to go ahead and do a show garden. But yes, small spaces, urban gardening, I think it's a very, very important element that we should all consider, especially in towns, built up areas where there is the need for more planting and small spaces, the imagination can just go wild. But yes, I think having urban planters with pots that can be designed to fit in with the actual area. I mean, most balconies, the balcony we're doing at Bloom's 10 square metres, and as you can see, we've managed to fit quite a bit in there. We've taken great consideration into the style of planting that we're doing, but also the growing media that the plants are going into.
So tell me what works then in a very small space, because presumably at the very beginning you're planting something that's small and you think, oh, it'll be fine, and then it kind of becomes like the New Forest before you know it. Yeah. So what type of plants work best in a small environment?
Well, I suppose this is a misconception about planting. You know, sometimes a plant will generally grow to the size that the pot allows it to, and then you will gradually or naturally have to pot that on. But you can, you can get away with a lot of large plants as long as you put them in a decent sized container and you have the right growing media in there. So, you know, if you're planting a tree on a balcony, a small tree, you would have a planter there with a growing media that's maybe got a bit of soil content in it. So the roots can grow and have the nutrients take up that they require. So yes, there's a number of different plants that you can put in there. You know, evergreens, you can put perennials in there that would, you know, plants for pollinators, and as I say, edibles as well. So you can actually do quite a lot with a very small space.
And getting height into a balcony garden, people wouldn't necessarily normally think of that. They'd be trying to keep things small and in small pots. But having a tree or having something that maybe comes over the top of the balcony, a tumbler?
Things like ivy, you know. I just think ivy is sometimes a very underrated plant, but actually it does a lot. It's very good at greening up, you know.
Grows fast.
Walls. It does grow fast, but yeah, you know, you can have that planted in pots to grow over the side of it, you know, with shrubs, with trees, specimen plants that will give you height and give you structure even in a small space. So the same sort of principles apply as it would with a garden. You know, you want height, you want the contrast, so you can do all that with it. So you're just reducing it to get that effect. But also, one of the most important things about people planting balconies and small gardens is the what it can actually do for the environment when you scale it up.
Now, you're busy down in the Phoenix Park at the moment. Yes. You're building it, you're constructing. Are you seeing what else is going on around you, getting some inspo?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's some lovely gardens. There really is. And when you walk down there, and to be in the middle of it when it's being constructed, is definitely... You know.
So it's your first appearance at Bloom with a garden. Will it be your last?
I don't know. Ask me after next week.
Okay. Well, Gavin Saunders, New Leaf Compost, with the Above and Beyond Balcony Garden. Do take a look at it, folks. Bloom is on the June Bank Holiday Weekend, May 30th to June 3rd in the Phoenix Park. It is always well attended, and fingers crossed for the weather.
Indeed.
All right. Well, listen, thanks a million for joining us on the Home Show and taking time out of your busy building schedule. And you're very welcome back to the third part of this week's Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Now, Cameron Diaz courted some controversy recently when she said we need to normalise married couples sleeping in different bedrooms. She follows other celebrities who also like to sleep and in some cases live apart. So should we all be investing in another master bedroom? Well, I'm delighted to be joined by Arlene McIntyre from Ventura Design. Arlene, I couldn't think of a better placed person to talk about this. I suspect you've more than one celeb client who are having this arrangement. You're very welcome to the Home Show.
Good morning.
I couldn't think of anybody better placed to do this item, because I reckon, as interior designer to the stars, there are more than one celebs who have the space, the money and the inclination to allow themselves the luxury, if it is a luxury, of separate bedrooms at home or even separate houses.
I know. It's incredible. And if everyone had the space, I think they probably would consider it.
Would they?
I think so. I do.
All right. Well, let's go through some of the people we know or suspect or have told us that are happy in separate bedrooms. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, this is something that royals and aristos have done forever. I mean, yeah, if you own a castle, I mean, why wouldn't you just have this wing for me and this wing for you and we'll meet at lunch kind of thing?
Yep.
They've done it for good. Although we're not sure, like the modern ones, Kate and William, not.
Well, I think Barack and Michelle had separate bedrooms as well.
Did they?
Yes.
Right.
Well, he has crazy working hours and she needs her sleep.
Yeah, and she needs to go up and do her arms at 5 a.m.
Exactly.
and all that kind of thing. Okay, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. You see, you could see it if you had the room. Cameron Diaz?
Yes, she's the girl. She's the one that's kind of broke this story, really, and kind of brought it on the table that it should be normalised.
Yeah, and do you think there's a kind of an element of slight shame about it, like I'm admitting we have separate bedrooms rather than I'm boasting about us having separate
bedrooms.
Yeah,
maybe so. But they've just recently had a child. And I think for her, it was a personal kind of choice that they're getting more out of their relationship because they're both getting their sleep and their time is really quality time when they are together. And when they find together time, may it be in a third bedroom in the house or you know, having, you know, a different type of dynamic in the relationship, you know, at the end
of
the day.
And I suppose like all parents, all parents will know that for years, sometimes a long time of years, you have this musical beds thing going on where you've toddlers and you've babies and they're not sleeping and you're getting up to breastfeed and all that kind of thing. And most people, if they're lucky enough to have a spare room, will absolutely know each of us takes
100%.
The spare room. Yeah, that's normal. Yep. That's every day. Yep. Nobody should worry about that. Get your sleep when you can is my advice. This is different now. This is about people who design it as a lifestyle choice.
That's true.
Isn't it?
That is true.
So Julia Roberts, Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton, they have separate houses. I mean, that's like extreme.
Well, you know, whatever floats your boat, they're happy. They are so happy. You know, they have
they've
houses all over
marriages.
The world.
Yeah.
So I'd say they're traveling quite a bit, but it seems to work for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Gwyneth Paltrow, we think, has separate bedrooms from her. I don't know. It's hard to keep up if they're all still together. Brad Falchuk.
Yes, yes, yes.
And allegedly, and I'm sticking my neck out here, the Beckhams have separate wings.
It would not surprise me. I mean, she has a serious wardrobe and so does he.
She does have a serious. Yeah. Yes, they do actually.
Yeah.
And
so
she
would
have
work for them.
She would have serious taste and possibly not his. We'd think he'd probably be very masculine, would he?
Yeah, but I think this is so exactly like something they'd love to do. Even if they spent all their time in their together room, I think they'd just love the idea of having their own spaces.
Their together room. That's all right. Okay, let's get down to details. What are the reasons that people cite that they want separate bedrooms?
It really is those common things like work schedules, perhaps, you know, depending on if it's his or her room, you know, crazy working hours. I would often get asked to have his and hers bathrooms, obviously, his and hers wardrobes, his and hers living room spaces, Sinead. That's very normal.
Okay.
In fact, you would have a kid's living space. Or, you know, a lady's living space and a man cave space. So that's been around forever.
Okay.
And I've created many spaces like that within the house. And then there's a family room. And so you'll get that room, which is, you know, typically the cinema room where the whole family gang in and...
Okay.
Yeah, or the kitchen area. So that's pretty normal. I have had two projects whereby we did have two bedrooms for each of the couples, you know, his and her bedrooms.
Now, so in those cases, I mean, clearly they have the space for it. Was it a design aesthetic they were after in that, like a sanctuary that they wanted for themselves? Or is it like we can't stand each other, but we're all loved up on Instagram?
No, it was just this one project I worked on in Jersey. It was an enormous house and it was nearly 10,000 square foot and they had the space to do it. They only had one child at the time. And it was just a decision that she preferred one color scheme and one view. And he preferred another kind of colour scheme and another view. He liked watching television till the wee hours of the night. She did not. She was a reader. She liked reading books and relaxing and all those things. So it was just a total lifestyle choice for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they managed to have one child.
Yeah, well,
oh, okay, right. Okay,
I must touch base with them. I guess well, maybe there's more or has arrived, but it actually was so normal and it really worked for them. Mm. And one helped the other with their bedroom choices and it was all very open and it was a wonderful idea for them and they were happy out.
And look, I know I kind of sound a bit judgy here. Maybe I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
So in people then who want to have separate bedrooms, like the aesthetic then, you're looking at something super masculine for the men that maybe their wives would normally say, we are not doing the whole room in black marble and mahogany.
Exactly. So one room might have that really strong masculine Armani look going on with darker tones and woods and leather and walnuts and ebony and all those deeper tones. And then in the female's room, she might kind of lean into the more feminine tones and brighter kind of blush tones or loads of creams or...
the Martha Stewart.
Exactly. Very calming and fresh and bright and all that.
What does it say about different genders that that kind of seems to be instilled? Is it... do you think that's something that we have been... brought up with, I know this isn't your area, it's definitely not mine either, but do you think it's that sense of comfort and what gives us peace? Because our bedroom in particular is the one that we need as a sanctuary. It's not common living area. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to impress other people with it.
No.
It is very, very personal. Mm-hmm. And what does it say about men that they want what they want and women that they go for the peace and the quiet? I am a woman, obviously, but so I can understand the neutral tones, the calmness,
the calming,
the view,
and all that.
The kind of the fresh. I couldn't sleep in something that was so drama laden.
I know. It is. It's so individual. And for example, in this one project, he had a treadmill in the bedroom opposite the television, and she just thought that was horrific. And he was like, "But this relaxes me. This relaxes me." And you know, she was of the mind that that should be down in the gym. And he was like, "Well, actually, if it's in the gym, I won't be able to relax. This is what works for me." So it was very individual. And they're happy. I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it works. Happy. And they have a gym. Holy God, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can see my husband wanting the Peloton bike in the bedroom, actually. If I gave him half a second. Okay, I hope he's not listening to this. Don't give him ideas, Arlene. We've only the one bedroom.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So it's about the different things that relax you.
Totally. And bathrooms are huge. Like, that's been happening forever, even before, even more so than the separate bedrooms.
Okay.
I've encountered that more frequently.
Okay, so let's talk about bathrooms then, because in some houses, and probably older houses, large houses, we have separate sinks. You come across that quite a lot. One bathroom, but separate sinks. And I totally get that.
Yeah. But one sink might be very neat and tidy, the other might not be.
You stuff. We have stuff to put around our sink. A bloke has a toothbrush. We have stuff.
Yeah, but
shelves and bottles and brushes and all that kind of thing.
True.
So talk to me then about the aesthetic in separate bathrooms.
Well, generally speaking, now I'm just being very general. This is just in my recent experience. there's this incredible new toilet that's on the market. It's not new. It's called the Toto toilet. It's a Japanese model that nearly speaks to you. It's motorized. It warms up as you're approaching it. The lid opens. It lights up in the dark. It's, you know, does the wash and blow dry, everything, Sinead. It's full on amazing.
The wash.
And we've had loads of those. You can actually purchase those in Tazda. But they're amazing. I love them. They're great fun. But they would often be in his bathroom.
The gadgets and the gizmos.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And then the shower. And then there's all sorts of spec on the shower and the way they like the shower and the pressure on the shower. And then in the female, it would be a completely different thing. You know, even the palette would be very different.
Like spa-like?
Yeah, very, very, very different.
So one slow like lighting and a bath.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he would like be like, "I have no need for a bath," or "I want a sauna." Or, you know, they have just totally different requirements.
Mm. Right. And then when it comes to the closets, the walk-in wardrobes, dressing rooms, or whatever call them nowadays.
We've done loads and loads of his and hers wardrobes. Yeah. And that's great. That works out really well because they have all the space they need. In fairness, I think a lot of men get just the single drawer option or the spare bedroom option.
A few hangers maybe.
But the cloakroom at the front door option. But I think that's really nice for them to have their own wardrobe space. I think fair is fair.
So I'm thinking shoes make up a big proportion of women's walk-in closets.
Display
shoes?
Yeah, you'd have display shoes and handbags that would be changed seasonally. So may it be the winter collection, the autumn, the spring, the summer. So that would constantly rotate and they would have their stylists that would come in and organize all that for them, photograph everything, label it. It's a business. It's incredible. They have inventory on everything. And then on the his wardrobes, there would be like the rolling watch collection. The sunglasses in both his and hers would be big. Again, all down to seasonal. The holiday wardrobe, the new clothes wardrobe, the summer wardrobe, the weekend relaxing, the gym wardrobe, everything. Like,
Brancher Brown Thomas.
Yes.
How the other, I won't even say other half. This is the half of the 1%.
Right. But even their children's wardrobes are fabulous.
Okay.
So it kind of just doesn't stop there. You know, it's in every single room.
Yeah.
You know.
And what is it about that kind of, that whole sleep space? Because I know we spend like a third of our lives asleep.
Yeah.
But it's actually asleep. You're not going to see any of this.
No.
Is it just that sense of calm that comes over you when you see the order?
Yes.
And your stuff?
Yeah. It's the knowing that this is your sacred space.
Okay.
And having that privilege, you know, to be able to do that. It's not for, not everybody can have that privilege, obviously. And it's not just exclusive to the celebs and to the royals and all that. We do see it a lot in private people, very successful people that have, you know, options like this available to them. So it's amazing.
I mean, they bought the stuff. They want to be able to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And have it ultra organized when they need it because they're busy.
Curated nearly.
Yes.
So when they walk in, it's that sense, you think, of I want to wear my, you know, this sage green aesthetic today.
Yeah.
So I need to know where my bags are, my shoes, my
Correct.
Jewelry, without rifling through and shoveling through
whatever
drawers.
Whatever that capsule collection of look and feel of tone, whatever that is for the summer, will be out in the open shelving or beautiful backlit LED shelving where it's actually stunning. It's like something you'd imagine putting your china into. That is for their handbag collection, which in fairness would be incredibly expensive and valuable. So a lot of thought goes into that.
Yeah, that's
And they're all collectors as well. So a lot of them would be collecting very expensive, you know, leather goods and clothing that, you know, is archived and it's, you know, it's important to take care of those things.
No different then than showing off art or sculpture.
Yeah, 100%. That's valuable
their
stuff.
Okay.
I mean, look at Chanel, like the value of Chanel and the way that's increased so dramatically. So
I mean,
if
you have, and I hadn't really thought of that way before, but if you had a small drawing or you had a bowl or you had a little piece of statuary that cost you 6,000, 7,000, 8,000
Definitely. Ostrich eggs or whatever.
Yeah, quid a shot. You'd want to show it off, wouldn't you?
Yep.
You'd just be doing it in a communal area, Correct. Like a hallway or living room.
Mm-hmm.
Right, interesting. So whatever floats your boat. Now, for the rest of us, Arlene.
Yes.
What kind of small things could we do to order? I love that idea of order. My bedroom is very ordered. My clothes are ordered.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I had to dress in the dark, which I have done, I'm fairly certain that I could pick out, you know, a pair of trousers and a top that would work in the dark because I know where all the colours are, which kind of makes me a bit, I don't know, maybe there's a bad word for that other than ordered, neurotic perhaps. But what would you recommend to give us that sense of calm where we can't, you know, rearrange the whole thing and have it done by stylists and people like you?
Well, I think you need to find some common ground, probably sit down and look at some kind of pin boards together, create a pin board together. That's how I would start it. Something that appeals to both of you as a couple. Get organized. Declutter. It can really change your life, as you know, decluttering. And only have the necessities out of what you need. It's funny when you open up the his bedside table versus the hers. I mean, she can be very messy too. He can be very organized. It all depends. Everyone's different. But I think, you know, having there is a place for everything. Keeping it nice and organized. Color coding is important. Separating your winter fur coats or whatever. I'm joking, obviously. But your wool heavy coats and all those things. Separate them from your summer clothing. It'll change your life. Bedding, obviously, you need to agree on color schemes. And one person might like a chandelier in the room, the other might hate it. So it's just trying to compromise and come up with something that works for you both.
Okay, good tip there. My own top tip is to go into I would say Argos, but I think they're gone now, and get those vacuum packed large bags, the ones that you use the Hoover to kind of take out the air. And actually, if you put, because summer here, like, I don't know, it's a euphemism, obviously, for a couple of weeks, but all the stuff in that hoovers out and it goes under the spare bed.
It's incredible.
That's my summer wardrobe aesthetic. But actually, they're brilliant. Yeah. And it means then you can have more clothes than you can fit, but you get rid of them. You're not looking at them in the middle of November.
Yeah, such a clever idea.
Yeah.
But see, a lot of these people are traveling into different time zones, so they can't really do that.
Of course. Yeah. I didn't think of that. I wish that was me. Arlene, as always, thank you very, very much. You've given some of your clients, I'd say now, new ideas, have you?
Well, can't say too much, but it's always interesting. Every day's a school day.
Very good. All right. Well, folks, I don't know. Would you fancy several bedrooms? I think there might be more women out there who kind of going, oh, I'd love that now if I had the chance. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe it's the blokes as well. Get away from all the floral patterns and the cushions, the 87 cushions that we have on the bed. All right. Arlene, thanks very much. And you can find Arlene and all her ideas and gorgeous items on Ventura Design. And that is all we have time for this week. If you'd like to get involved in the show, you'd like to make contact with us, we would love to hear from you. That's thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You'll find me over on socials at SineadRyan100. And my thanks this week to Aidan McKelvey producing. Researcher was Rory Galvin and Stephen McLoon was on sound. And we will be back here next weekend. It's a bank holiday. And you know that we spoke earlier about the Balcony Gardens. Well, they'll be featuring at Bloom, which is on next weekend, and we will have a lovely show for you then. See you all next week.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.